Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hey, everybody. This is Parrish Alford. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State writer. Both of us are on the road covering different things. I'm in Chicago right now covering what did in fact become a historic night for Ole Miss football in the draft, but it may have become, may end up being more history than the Rebels want to deal with. We'll talk about Laramie Tunsil's comments in just a moment. Logan is on the road with Mississippi State baseball in Tuscaloosa trying to work Taco Casa into the schedule somewhere. Logan, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing good, Parrish. Yeah, like you said, we're different states. I'm a little bit closer to home than you are. I think I'm just right down Highway 82 from the house. But I got to experience Alabama's new baseball stadium last night. I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later on in the podcast. But I was very impressed with what I saw there. But, yeah, I was following the events from Chicago last night, you know, kind of had an eye on the draft, kind of looking to see where Chris Jones, if he was going to go in the first round. And, yeah, the Ole Miss thing kind of dominated the conversation in the press box last night for, Mississippi State and Alabama beat writers that were up there.
I am sure that it did. Well, let's start off with the good news for Ole Miss. And the good news that happened on Thursday was that Ole Miss baseball won 7-6 in its first game against LSU in that series. And that's about all I can tell you on that. I did look at the box score. I noticed that the Rebels had 11 hits against pretty good pitching and probably the most productive they've been against good pitching so far this season. And it looked like 9 of those hits came about from 4 players in the top of the order. But you can read about that from John Davis. The Oxford Citizen was handling that for us last night. We'll be covering that series. We are grateful to have J.D. and his help. But like I said, I am here in Chicago, here to cover what I thought would be 3 Ole Miss players selected in the first round. And indeed, there were. Laramie Tunsil slid to number 13. Much later than he thought he would be drafted. We'll talk about that. Robert Kimdichie was drafted number 29. He did stay in the first round, went to the Arizona Cardinals, and Laquon Treadwell went with the 23rd pick to Minnesota, the third receiver chosen in the draft, a little bit later than he thought or wanted to go, but both of those guys are genuinely excited for the opportunities ahead of them, and it's unfortunate, Logan, that both of those guys got just a couple of sentences in the journal, but the Tunsil story tended to dominate things on Thursday night, as you mentioned, as it was playing out. We saw right before the draft began that someone posted to Laramie Tunsil's Twitter account a video of him smoking presumably marijuana with a gas mask and a pipe and a lot of fumes around. And okay, so that video was there. Pretty soon that whole Twitter account was deleted. And then later in the draft, the Instagram screenshots appeared, and there's a conversation there where Tunsil identifies himself as LT and addresses someone as Mr. John, presumably John Miller, the assistant AD for football operations. And in that conversation, Tunsil asks for money to help pay for rent. And Miller's response implies that the school will assist, that it will help. He instructs Tunsil to get with Barney, go see Barney, and that would be Barney Farrer, another Ole Miss football staffer. Now, in the meantime, Laramie Tunsil, once projected to be the number one overall pick, slides out of the top 5, out of the top 10, all the way down to number 13, where he was taken by the Miami Dolphins. You know, Logan, when he was projected to be the number one pick, for months, that was when the Tennessee Titans had the first pick, and everyone thought that they would take an offensive tackle. to help protect Marcus Mariota, the former Heisman Trophy winner at Oregon, who they drafted last year and who had a very successful rookie year with the Titans. Well, the Titans traded out of that top spot. The Rams got it. They took the quarterback. They took Jared Goff out of Cal. So you knew that Tunsil was not going to be the number one pick, but there was still the idea, a lot of speculation that he could go number three to the Chargers or number six to the Ravens. Those were teams that had expressed a lot of interest in Tunsil. Well, not only did those teams pass on him, while one of them, I think the Ravens, gosh, it's all running together now, took Ronnie Stanley, the offensive tackle from Notre Dame. So not only did they pass on Tunsil, the Titans traded up again. The Titans were in the 15 spot. They traded with Cleveland. They got up to the number 8 spot, and they passed on Tunsil again. They passed on Tunsil anyway. You know, they for months it was thought that they would take him with the overall pick. Well, they got up to the 8 spot. Tunsil was still available, and they passed on him to draft Jack Conklin, an offensive tackle from Michigan State. So Tunsil ends up being the 13th overall pick, the third offensive tackle selected. And, you know, and you think that it has a lot to do with his social media accounts being hacked. But here's the thing that I thought about, Logan, when I was looking at that. You know, at first, it was all about the bong pipe and that video, that YouTube video that was posted to his Twitter account. If you're an NFL team, you know, number one, you can't be surprised that college football players are smoking marijuana. Okay, that's not to minimize that. It is still an illegal activity in most states, but the reality is that's prevalent among young people, many of them who happen to be college athletes. I mean, that's out there. That's out there for NFL players as well. I can't imagine that if you think that Laremy Tunsil has the skill and the athleticism that he could be a Pro Bowler and could be, you know, the offensive tackle of the future, I can't imagine that you haven't uncovered that in your own evaluation of him as you dig deep and find out about a guy that you might draft and pay millions. I can't imagine that you were surprised by a marijuana video. The other thing, you know, becomes the conversation with John Miller, and you know, that's an NCAA issue that doesn't often impact, you know, what an NFL team is thinking. But it may be that when you put the two of those things together, it becomes a character issue that Tunsil was not dealing with in the run-up to the draft. That was Robert Kimdichie's subplot. You know, he had the character questions and the off-field issues that, you know, some thought might drop him into the second round. That was not a Tunsil story leading up to the draft, but it may be that those two things together, you know, caused him to slide to number 13. And it's quite interesting now. As it was playing out, Logan, I was thinking about the teams that passed on Michael Jordan and drafted Sam Bowie. You know, you may remember that draft, or maybe you don't.
I've heard about it.
Yeah, you've heard about it. I remember that draft, okay? You know, maybe Tunsil has the skill set to be, you know, to be that type of player. It may be that he could develop into a Michael Jordan on the offensive line, and then you know, we're having these trivia questions years from now. Do you remember the two offensive tackles drafted ahead of Laremy Tunsil? That's the best thing Tunsil can do right now is to work hard and try to make that happen. But while Tunsil is no longer under the authority of the NCAA, Tunsil is now a part of the Miami Dolphins organization, and he'll answer to them and to the NFL. Ole Miss is still very much under the authority of the NCAA, and how his comments affect Ole Miss remains to be seen. A couple of things now. Remember, the Rebels have an ongoing NCAA investigation. It has reached a point to where the NCAA research and the NCAA's digging has stopped. The NCAA last January, late January, presented its findings to Ole Miss. All right. Since then, Ole Miss has been preparing its response, and last week was granted a 30-day extension to present its response. The school did not request that extension. It was requested by a third party. If the and as we said, Tunsil admitted that money changed hands between himself and an Ole Miss coach. All right. If, in fact, that was only to help with rent, and this was something that, you know, that Tunsil didn't address last night, and certainly Ole Miss wasn't addressing much, the school did release a statement, and we'll get into that here in just a second. But if, in fact, money changing hands was only about money that was going from Ole Miss to Tunsil to help with rent, that would in all likelihood be covered under the NCAA Student Assistance Fund. And this is something, Logan, that I was aware about last night when I was working, but could not stop what I was doing to go and research it and read more about it. Now, I was able to do that this morning here in the hotel, and I was aware of this fund because last spring, in the spring of 2015, you may remember the shooting, the racial, it became a racial story. You remember the shooting in Charleston, South Carolina, where a police officer shot a black man who appeared to be running in the opposite direction. I'm sure you saw the video.
Right.
Turned out that that the man who was shot was a family friend of Fadal Brown, the Ole Miss defensive end. Ross Bjork and I were having a conversation about that, and he was telling me that he felt like the school could help Brown fly to Charleston and help him get home for the funeral through the NCAA Student Assistance Fund. The NCAA not only approves giving money to student athletes to help them with needs such as this, but the NCAA contributes money to that effect. It gives it to the conferences and allows the conferences to disperse the money as they see fit. And frankly, it gives schools and conferences a lot of leeway to determine how to use that money. It is supposed to be need-based, awarded in terms of need. There are a few things that that it can't cover. They cite specifically that it can't go toward salary and benefits for a student athlete. It can't go toward capital improvements. You know, if a student athlete is trying to have work done on his home, can't go to that. It can't go for athletic development opportunities. In other words, if a student athlete wants to, go visit John Gruden in his camp, you know, it can't go for those expenses. All right. Those are the things that it can't, that fund can't be used for. But frankly, there's not much else that the fund strictly prohibits. And it sounds to me, and I would imagine that as this story continues to play out, that this will be the Ole Miss response as well. But it sounds to me like asking for money to help pay for rent would fall under the guidelines of the Student Athlete Assistance Fund.
Right. The only question I have with that, Parrish, and it may be something I don't even know that you can answer about reading all that, was when he asked the coach to help pay for his mom's light bill, which was $305. Now, I don't know if Laramie lived with his mom or what. You know, I could understand the school reaching out and helping the student athlete, but that does that extend to his immediate family as well?
Well, in fact, it does, and I'm reading from the NCAA manual right here, and it says the Student Assistance Fund is intended to provide direct benefits to student athletes or their families.
There you go.
As determined by conference offices. So, anyway, you know, we got a lot of obviously there was a lot of social media conversation with all of us as we were working last night, Logan, and some of it turned into shoot the messenger kind of stuff. And, you know, why are you reporting this? Why aren't you reporting that? The fact of the matter is all of that was playing out in real time, and stories like that, especially when they occur in prime time, are not told to the fullest right then. And, you know, it takes some time to work through things, and you know, it takes time for people to respond. Ole Miss did not issue a response until late last night, around midnight, and basically it was just from Kyle Campbell, the athletics media relations director, when he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, the school is aware of reports of comments attributed to Laramie Tunsil that could involve an NCAA violation. As we always do, we will investigate fully and cooperate fully, investigate aggressively and cooperate fully with the SEC and the NCAA. So that was the school's response. That came around midnight. So, you know, all of this is continuing to play out. It's a developing story, as we say. And, you know, the questions right now would be, if it was, in fact, for rent and utilities, does it fall under the guidelines of the Student Athlete Assistance Fund? And then, even if it does, how does the NCAA respond to this? Does it matter if it falls under that fund? Do they dig some more and see if they can find you know, find out more? They've been in Oxford for, 5 or 6 years looking at stuff. You know, maybe not that long, but looking at alleged improprieties that date back to 2010. All right, so do they reopen an investigation that right now has been closed in terms of their fact-finding effort? Do they reopen that? Do they let this current investigation play out on its regular schedule and come back with a second investigation, a second letter? You know, what is the NCAA's response here? And that's a question right now that, frankly, is just unanswered and is not going to be answered soon, I would think. The NCAA doesn't typically do things soon.
Yeah, and I know, Parrish, you've spent some time with Chris Jones this week, and yeah, he was not part of that first round last night. There were some mock drafts that had him go in the middle of the first round, late in the first round. That didn't happen. So he's still still there in Chicago, still there with his family, still waiting to hear his name called. So I'm assuming that would probably happen tonight when he gets to finally walk across that stage. You know, what are you hearing from Chris? What kind of feelings did Chris have about going in the first round when you talked to him this week?
You know, Chris was very hopeful that he would go in the first round. And, you know, as all of the prospects who are invited here are, they all believe they'll go in the first round, and they're hopeful. And the NFL believes they'll go in the first round, or believes they certainly have that opportunity, because, you know, they base that on who they invite to the draft. So just by being here, you know, they thought enough of Chris Jones that they knew, hey, this guy could be a first round pick. So, yeah, we know that that was there. But look, Chris Jones kind of made this late push up the mock drafts and kind of into the consciousness. We've talked about this before, Logan, how his rise at the end of this run up to the draft in many ways mirrored his football recruiting, his high school recruiting, because it was late. It was after his high school football season in 2012 when he got into the all-star circuit and really kind of began to rise up the recruiting rankings at that point. So a lot of mock drafts had him as a late first-round pick. Some had him in the teens. You know, some had him near the middle of the first round. But I think the bulk of the ones that I saw when he was mentioned had him as a late first round pick. And, you know, talking to guys, you know, other analysts and things, you know, a lot of people would qualify that by saying late first or early second. You know, so Chris Jones probably is still on schedule for what many believed, if it was late first, early second. I would think that that he'll go tonight, and I would think that he'll go fairly early in the second round, and I certainly hope so, because after last night, I need a little bit earlier, a little bit earlier draft night.
Yeah, and you don't have to look very far from Mississippi State fans to see this type of thing happening. The same thing happened to Benardrick McKinney last year. He was invited to the draft and sat there the whole first night and didn't get selected. And then he went early in the second round to the Houston Texans and ended up having a pretty good rookie season. So, you know, as Chris Jones said on Twitter last night, you know, things didn't happen the way that he wanted them to, but he's closer to his second contract now. I think somebody was telling me that maybe guys that don't go in the first round have the ball's kind of in their court as far as that second contract, just kind of what it was explained to me.
Well, you know what? That's something that would require more research from me.
Right. Really that's why I was getting somebody to tell me so I didn't have to do the research
myself.
That's
right. Yeah, I am not well-versed and schooled in the NFL contracts. I think another interesting story tonight will be, you know, where does Dak Prescott fall? Does he make it into the second or third round? Some have him projected as the fourth round. You know, that would put him as a third-day guy. Does Dak Prescott become a second-day guy and get up there in the second or third rounds? You know, that's certainly what his agent believes. Now, you know, if your agent doesn't believe in you,
yeah,
you know, who's going to believe in you? But, you know, Rick Roberts really, you know, in my conversations with him, had extremely high praise for Dak and his work ethic and things of that nature. So can Dak Prescott get up into the second round? Where in the second round? I think that will be an interesting Mississippi State story tonight as well. Tell us, Logan, a little bit of baseball, man. You covered baseball last night. I kind of followed along on Twitter. How'd State look against Alabama?
It was kind of a back and forth ball game, and you know, Alabama came into this series as the lowest hitting team in the SEC. You know, their bats were kind of non-existent. I mean, they've pitched it well this year and gotten a lot of good starting pitching, but you know, just their offense couldn't sustain most of that good pitching that they've had. But you wouldn't know it with the way Alabama hit the ball last night. They ended up with 8 hits. Most of those came early, and they hit the ball hard. And I was really impressed with what I saw with Alabama's offense. I really wasn't expecting much. I mean, you look up and down their lineup, you know, none of those averages really jump out at you. None of their power numbers jump. I mean, really nothing offensively jumps at you except for how bad it is. But they hit the ball well last night. But Mississippi State kind of took that. I mean, Dakota Hudson didn't have his best start, but he was okay. I mean, that's kind of how he's been over the last few weeks. He's just been okay. He hasn't had that dominant start that he started conference play with. And, you know, Mississippi State's offense this year is actually good enough to overcome something like that. You know, last year when they didn't get good starting pitching, actually the last several years when they didn't get good starting pitching, their offense just wasn't good enough to overcome that. Well, you know, this year it is. And, you know, Mississippi State finishes with 11 hits. They ended up winning that game 12-5. They scored 5 runs in the top of the third and in the top of the ninth inning to kind of overcome that. You know, I think it was a 7-5 game going into the, yeah, I guess it's the bottom of the seventh inning. So it's a tight ball game until that ninth inning when Mississippi State scores 5 runs. They had a couple of home runs. Gavin Collins hit a 2-run homer in the third inning, and then Brent Rooker hit a 3-run homer in the top of the ninth inning to kind of extend that lead. But you can't say enough about a guy at the top of the lineup like Jake Mangum. If anybody's going to be the SEC freshman of the year, it's got to be him. I mean, this guy is just an on-base machine. He's doing it as a true freshman, and he's doing so in a critical part because Mississippi State has not had Jacob Robson since the Ole Miss series. He went down with a fracture in his left hand. Hasn't been able to play. He has pinch run in that Biloxi game last week. He got in as a pinch runner and stole 2 bases in that game. That's somebody they're desperately missing out in center field and at the top of their lineup. But they haven't missed him as much with Jake Mangum up there just continually hits the ball. I mean, I was doing some stuff with him last week, and I hadn't looked to see if this has changed. But he'd only struck out 6 times the entire season. And this is a guy that's second in the SEC in batting average right now. He just cannot keep him off base. He's going to find a way to get on. And that was the case last night. He went 3-for-5 with an RBI triple in that game. And it was a really big game for him, too, because he was committed to Alabama at one point. His dad, John Mangum, was an All-American defensive back at Alabama. Obviously, he went on to the NFL, had a good career with the Chicago Bears. But, you know, that was a huge game for him. We'll have to see if that can continue this weekend. But Mississippi State got off to another good start. The road's been very kind to Mississippi State in conference play. They're 7-4 on the road in the SEC. And then anytime you can win your road games in the SEC, you're going to set yourself up not only for a good spot in Hoover, but also a good chance to host in the postseason. And looking at some of the postseason projections, Mississippi State is obviously a host site in those, but a few of those services, including the one that you and I used the most, D1 Baseball, has Mississippi State as a national seed at this point, and that would be huge. I mean, obviously, Mississippi State's known for the crowds and the atmosphere that they create at Duty Noble Field, and you throw postseason in the mix, and that's going to lead to some huge, huge crowds. I mean, Mississippi State set the record a couple years ago during Super Bowl all weekend against Ole Miss. They also set the they made the second attendance record a couple of weeks ago at Super Bulldog weekend. Obviously, they have all those super regional and regional records as well. So it could be a big year for Mississippi State in the postseason if they can continue this thing. But they'll have to do that again tonight. Obviously, Alabama proved that they can hit the ball, and Austin Sexton, they need a good outing from him tonight. And you know, I mentioned the ballpark earlier. Sewell Thomas Stadium is a stadium that I grew up going to. I mean, I went to high school in the Tuscaloosa area, went to a lot of games over there, and this is my first look inside the stadium. I actually saw it a couple of months ago when I was over here for basketball. They were playing a game when I was leaving, and kind of got to see a look from it from the outside. But from the inside, it's an immaculate stadium. They did a really, really good job with it over here, and I was really impressed.
Yeah, they really did. Very nice facility there. And Ole Miss now against LSU has an opportunity to win the series, and they need to win the series against someone who they are competing against, jockeying for position with, in the Western Division. Ole Miss went into this weekend with 10 SEC wins, has them really in good position in the SEC West race. I think they were a game behind State and 2 behind Texas A&M or something like that. But the fact is, 6 of Ole Miss's 10 SEC wins have come against Arkansas and Auburn, the two worst teams in the Western Division. The Rebels do not have a tiebreaker against they lost the series to Alabama. They lost the series to State. They really could use the tiebreaker with LSU and really help themselves climb in the SEC standings. We'll see if they can get that done this weekend. Folks, that's going to wrap us up. Before we go, we'd like to remind you to check out the other podcast from the Daily Journal, The Memo, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And Prep Rally with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps, everything you need to know about high school sports, that's every Wednesday. Typically, we're here for you with double coverage on Thursdays. Our schedule's been a little bit off the last couple of weeks, but know that we will be here for you every week talking Mississippi State and Ole Miss with double coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Folks, we thank you for being with us. Come back and join us next week.